Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey B. has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today on my show, I've got my great friend, Inspector Dave, in the studio. Inspector Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Always fun to come in and talk about organic gardening with the audience.
Well, you know what? The title of the show, The Dirt on Soil, I'd like to take credit, but that one's yours.
Yes, it kind of comes from the inspiration where you're always correcting me when I say dirt and you say, no, it's soil. So that's your scientific side there, keeping me technically correct.
Oh, sometimes we got to do that. And sometimes it's just in a fun way, putting a good friend in place, so to speak. So let's get to it. What is soil and why is it so important to have good soil?
You know, this is kind of a technical question, so I think I'm going to refer to the environmental scientist, Joey B., to give us the real dirt on soil.
So let's talk about it this way. So I'm going to give you a little environmental science side, but in a fun way, in a light way, and that's typically what we do on the show. Well, weathering, the term is the wearing away of rock material, and it could be worn away by wind, water, ice. So you have that. So now you have all these minerals, because that's what rocks are made up of. Then I always would write down an equation, and my equation is soil equals minerals plus organic matter. And you go, so what does that mean? Well, we can see the wearing away of rocks and organic matter. Well, I sort of joke and say it this way, especially if I happen to be with youth, but even with adults, like Skippy the squirrel is hopping along and somehow Skippy dies. Well, he's going to biodegrade down into the soil, and there's your organic matter. Or it could just simply be leaves falling to the ground, and when leaves fall to the ground, it's called leaf litter. And as it mixes with the minerals, that's how we get soil. So there's the science behind it. So Inspector Dave, what's the importance of having good soil?
Well, the important is because that's where all the nutrition from your plants or whatever you're growing, whether it's a lawn, we're talking primarily plants today, that's where the nutrition comes that makes that wonderful thing, nature converting all these nutrients into something you can eat.
Ah, so here's my question then is, what does the term soil amendment mean? I hear that often. Soil amendments, what is it?
Well, it's a way to bring your soil into a healthier state. Most of the times, the soil that we have in our yards is not 100% where it needs to be. So it's a way to make that soil, to enrich that soil with various items, which we'll talk about as we go on, to make it hospitable for the plants so that they grow well, that they grow without disease, that they produce the crops, they grow the way you want, they grow strong. So it's just a way to do things. Just like when we wrote the Constitution, it wasn't 100% right, so we had to do amendments. Well, our soils may not be 100% right, so we're amending it or adding things to make it better.
So our forefathers thought about soil amendments. No, they thought about other amendments. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So what about soil testing? Who, what, why, when, all of those things?
Well, again, soil testing is an important part of amending your soil, because you can't just look at your soil and say, oh, I need to put this in, or I need to do that, or it's missing this. You have to go the scientific route, and there's a number of ways you can do it. You can do it yourself. They have little kits you can get, little chemistry kits. They have meters you can get, and you can do a lot of the working on the soil to see what's in there and kind of take a good review of it. But another good way, too, is to take samples and mail them out to a research laboratory, you know, whether Rutgers or whatever is in your state, and local county agents, they all have different ways of doing the soil. So early in the season, you would take some samples, mail them out. They would mail them back to you. Even there's private groups you can hire, too. You can pay to have it done. And they'll send back to you, okay, this is what your soil has, and this is what it needs to have, and this is what you can add in there that will make it bigger and better.
And you alluded to something I was going to ask you is, I guess, when is the proper time you should be testing your soil?
Well, as soon as the soil can be worked in the springtime, because if you're getting ready to do a springtime planting, you need time for you to take the samples, to get it to the lab, to give them the turnaround time, because they're going to be swamped with work too, and then to give you time to amend it in there. So as early as you can get out there where the ground's not muddy and it's not frozen, you get a sample and start getting it going to the research lab if that's the route you're going to go.
All right. So with that being said, so I now have that back and I have a report and I now know what I need. When is the best time to amend the soil?
Well, the best time is before planting time, obviously. You want to do it as early in the season as it can be worked. And when we mean as to be worked, the ground can't be too wet. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we go on in a couple of the other questions. But the ground has to be friable, workable, not really wet, not frozen, obviously, because you want to try and get the nutrients in there to give them time to do their thing, to work, to get balanced out, and to make the soil a complete thing, to get the chemistry right in the soil.
Well, you know something? And it also depends on your area of the country because there's so many listeners. Well, actually, we have an international audience. So somebody in Italy right now and somebody in Venezuela right now is listening to this show. So they are going to use whatever their timetable is in regard to what their spring is in the world. Sometimes our spring is their winter, et cetera, and vice versa with that one. Now, and you mentioned a little bit about moisture. Does the moisture and weather have a play in this early on in the season?
Absolutely, because you don't want to work the soil when it's too wet, because then it'll clump up and you're going to get big mud balls out there and you're really going to wreck the soil's texture for that season. So don't rush it. Wait till it's dry. You should be able to pick up a piece of the soil in your hand, make like a fist with it, trying to make a ball out of it, and it should crumble. If it stays hard like a softball or a hard ball and muddy and stuff, just you have to go away and you have to come back when it dries out a little bit more. So crumbly, like a little bit moist, but crumbly, it's much better so you don't destroy the soil when you're actually trying to help it out there. And the weather time, you know, it's nice to work out there. I mean, some of us garden year-round. We're lucky we have year-round weather, so amendments occur at different times during the year, you know, prior to what we're planning. But working with the weather, too, you don't have to worry about a frost because you're not planting anything yet. So as soon as it's cool, it's nice to go out there and work. It's hard work amending the soil most of the time. So you don't want to be out there when it's 90 degrees and 100% humidity trying to do this. So the cooler weather is a nice time to amend.
And that definitely makes sense out there about what time of the year to be there. And what are the types of soil? Like, what types are there?
Well, there's sandy soil, silty soil, and clay soil. And again, it has to do with particulate size of the soil, and that gets a little technical. We're not going to go into the microns and all that. But basically, if you have the sandy soil, which you'll find generally more near the shore and stuff, areas like that, that's the soil's very loose and sandy, just like it says. And the problem with sandy soil is that the water and the nutrients tend to migrate quickly through that soil because it doesn't have any holding power to it. Clay soil, on the opposite, is the other way around. It's a thick, heavy soil, and water may not permeate it quite as well. And you want to make sure that you add organic matter to that to try to break it up a little bit more so the roots of the plants can work their way through the clay a little bit easier. And silt is really kind of a combination of the two. So you want to, it'll have sandy and clay. But that's why looking at the soil and trying to analyze it is a good way to go, because unless you're really experienced, if you're a first-time gardener, you want to get some technical help. Like, okay, what kind of soil do I have here? It sounds kind of obvious, but at the same point, you want to make sure if you're going to go to all that work of digging and amending, that you do it the right way.
And it's funny, as you're describing that, I'm thinking about where I was growing up, my parents, their home, the backyard, my dad and I, because I'm a little guy, and we're working the soil, and it was real solid clay soil. And now they move to the shore, and they go from clay soil to pure sand soil. And just the difference in the soils, because again, now that they're up in years, I am their gardener when I head on down there doing some, you know, flowers and things like that with them. So it's the different types of soil that they're exposed to, but I also am. And do I need to know about these types, or do I need to know these soils themselves?
Well, yes, you need to understand that because, again, that's going to make a big impact on what type of plants maybe that you're going to put in there and what you're going to add there in terms of amendments to make the perfect soil, you know, for your vegetable garden. We're going to concentrate more on vegetable gardens when we're talking about amendments because that's what the big part of work is about. I like to, if I'm doing all that work, I want to eat it, not just look at it. But this also applies, though, for flowers and for lawns even, you know, doing this kind of work. Tilt is like a big part of it too. When you're working in the soil, we talked before about if it's too wet, and the tilt of the soil is again a indication of the health of the soil, that it's loose enough for oxygen and water to work its way in too, because we think about, oh, I got to get water into the soil, I got to water my plant. You have to have air in the soil too, and that's the purpose of having your soil aerated, if it's a clay type, to loosen up a little bit more so oxygen can get into the roots of the plant, which will help with breaking down different microorganisms that are in the soil and to help with the nutrient uptake of the plant also.
And you know, it's funny, as you're mentioning that you'd rather eat it than look at it. But going from my property over to your property, you get over there and a neighbor next to you uses, we'll call it the chemical lawn, and your lawn is spectacular year-round, and in the summertime, theirs is, like, I guess is it's a hay lawn at that point, just dry. And then you talk about, well, you want to eat it, not look at it, but you have the beautiful flower gardens surrounding your organic garden there too. So I guess, you know, even though you're saying you still do a great job with all of it, I'd say that. Now, do I need to incorporate materials into my garden, or how do I do this?
Well, this is the hard part. This is when the work becomes into play here. So if you make sure you have a strong back or, you know, good arms, or you have some help with that, because if you have a relatively large area, and if you have a small area, it's easy. You just get a little shovel or spade. You can add some few things in there. You know, maybe you just have a flower pot. Even a flower pot may require soil amending, or container gardening when you're doing that, to add some extra amendments in there to make that soil better. But when you're going into the large garden area, there's going to be some digging involved, some rototilling involved. So it's a way to, you got to mix things up. So whatever route we're going to go for mixing.
Well, you know what? You mentioned about that and container growing, and they can go to joeybee.tv. So you can go to joeybee.tv and see shows on container growing with Inspector Dave and myself, and then in the garden. But don't go there now. You need to listen to the rest of this show so your garden is great. Now, what are the pros and cons of rototilling?
So rototilling, we always think about that when we're going to incorporate things into our garden. We're going to amend the soil, because we see farmers rototilling, and they have different types of rototillers or disking, and there's all mechanical ways to do it. And some of let's do the cons first, I guess, and then we'll talk about the happy side. You know, the worst part of rototilling probably is the worm abuse that occurs, because your soil now, especially organic soil, will be full of worms. They've done their thing in there, and they're working all through the season doing their thing, and then you come through with your rototiller and kind of stir them up, chop them up, and it's just kind of rough on them. They'll recover and all that, but it does happen. The tunnels that they've created in there to let the air into the soil and all that, you've kind of ended their hard work now. So that has to be reconfigured by the worms. Hard pan is another thing. And hard pan is a term that's used when you rototill at the same depth all the time. And what happens is you just get a hard layer of soil, because the tines or whatever the equipment is on the rototiller is going against that soil and it's making it hard. So now maybe the top 6 or 10 inches or 12 inches of your soil is great. And then as soon as you get to that layer, the water can't permeate anymore. The roots can't get down there. So the way to overcome this is to try and rototill at different depths over the years and try to avoid that hard pan. And of course, rototillers, as far as all the ones I've seen, all take fossil fuels, so you're going to have a carbon footprint from this rototill, kind of offsets a little bit of your organic side of it, so you are making noise and making fumes and polluting the environment a little bit with the rototiller. Some of the good things about it, though, it's quick, because you take your rototiller, you can go through the ground, and you can amend things and add things in there very quickly, and it mixes them up. It's like, think about it like a blender on its side, a rototiller. And it's all you're doing is trying to blend your amendments with the soil. And it's quicker, so it does save you a lot of time because you have that mechanical stuff helping you. And the equipment is generally very reliable, but it can be pretty heavy. Rototillers can be quite hard to use. There's front-tine rototillers and rear-tine rototillers. I don't really get into mechanical thing on rototillers, but there's different varieties. Some people just hire someone to come in and do that. You get all your things together that you want to put into the soil and then hire someone to come in and use the rototiller for you. So that way you don't have the investment of a rototiller, the storage problem, and starting to make the thing run and the physical work of it.
Well, you know, as you're mentioning that, and you and I actually had this conversation the other day, and just real simple, correct? I can't even speak anymore. Rear tine rototillers are just a lot easier to use than front-tine.
Oh, that's the Cadillac of rototills if you have one of those. They're much bigger to use, but they're self-propelled. The wheels will help move the tines through there. And it's especially good if you have a brand new area. It'll dig in a lot easier than a front tine tiller, which will kind of bounce over the hard surfaces of a new gardening area.
And, you know, something that actually, because it's going to do a quicker, better job, as you're talking about time constraints and the carbon footprint, and you actually have a smaller carbon footprint with the rear tine because you're using it less and, you know, obviously using less fossil fuels. So what's double digging?
Double digging, in my book, is a thing that I try to forget about, but I did do it a number of years ago in my younger days when my back was very strong. And double digging is super labor intensive. And the theory behind this method is to try and bring up minerals from the subsurface. So what you do is you dig up the first 10 or 12 inches of good-looking topsoil that you may have in the area, set it aside, and then dig another foot or two down into the subsoil and bring up minerals supposedly that are down there and good nutrients, and then kind of blend them. So now you've gone way, way down below what the normal root zone would be for a plant, so the ground will drain very well. Might be good if you have a very small area and you can, you know, you have your help with that and you get a shovel or a pitchfork and get in there and do that. But believe me, it's very, very labor intensive. I'm not quite sure of the total benefits of it because, again, you're disturbing the natural layering of the soil, which, you know, a lot of books tell you you should not be doing that.
Well, actually, and if there was a cutaway version, we call them soil horizons, and you could actually see the difference. Like if you were going out to nature somewhere, and environmental scientists, we do this, and you dig down somewhere to see the soil horizons so you could see the different depths of where the A horizon is, where the organic matter is as you're working down, and you're now digging into a separate horizon down there. Now, what about layering or less invasive methods?
Well, the layering method is you're kind of following what happens in the forest or in nature, where layers of material come down, like leaves come down, branches come down, little critters that pass away in the woods, different things that are in the woods there. And it just makes natural layers, and they decompose at different rates. So each one is feeding the other one. And the idea of this is that the worms are working in there and other little critters that are in the ground, the microbes, making everything decompose. So you're not upsetting the natural way of things. And how you do this, you just keep adding layers. It's like lasagna. It's like, think about lasagna, you know, in your garden. And then you just take a fork. They have special forks that you just kind of push them down and rock the soil a little bit to, just to keep it opened up to make sure air is getting in there. Remember, we need oxygen in the soil too. So we want to make sure that we're allowing that in there. So we just rock it to open it up a little bit, but not actually turn it over.
Well, you know, first thing that, now you're talking about lasagna. We're here in the studio and there's no food here. So you got me hungry on that one. And then the second thing is farmers, and this is starting, it's not big time farming just yet, but we're going to no-till farming, which is very similar to what you just described there. Now, getting into the soil itself, what are some of the products we can use to amend the soil? And tell me some of the pros and cons that go along with it.
Yeah. Just one quick thing on that rototilling too. That was one of the big things historical with the big dust bowl that we had out in the Midwest decades ago. People rototilled the land and then just used it until they used all the nutrients up, did not amend it, and then moved on to the next field and the next field. And we ended up having just acres and zillion acres of just dust blowing all over the place because the ground wasn't attended to properly or cared for because people just kept digging it and tilling it and moving on and not reusing the soil. So some of the things that we can do to amend soil, there's a number of products out there. Some are commercially available. Some are things that maybe you can collect on your own if you look around the neighborhood. One of the first ones is green sand. This is one of my favorite secret ingredients. It's a little hard to find at times, but green sand comes from marine deposits, and it's available commercially. They sell it by the bag. You can either buy it in a store or if you want to pay for shipping, get it shipped to your house. And I just add this in, and this just gives a different variety of nutrients and minerals into the soil that you won't normally find, and it actually looks like green sand. And you don't need a lot of it. It's a tad expensive, but I find it's really been a really great thing to have in there. And it's easy to put in, especially if you have a clay soil. It's another way to help open up that soil.
Can you find that green sand anywhere?
You look around garden centers, you can find it online. Every once in a while, the environmental agencies kind of go on a warpath and they shut down some of the mining operations, I guess, because they are environmentally impactful on the areas and stuff. So occasionally there'll be shortages of it. So you just got to kind of shop around for it. Worm castings are another thing that you can use. The thing with worm castings is these would be for smaller gardens or for container gardening because you're not going to buy 100 pounds of worm castings. It just would not be affordable, but they just add a whole nother level of nutrients into the soil. To kind of think that people are marketing worm poop.
It's worm poo-poo. Yeah. If you don't know what worm castings is out there, so yeah. Hey, as a scientist, we'd call it scat. So we got worm scat going on. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then there's bat guano, where they go into the caves and get the bat guano out, and you can incorporate that. Peat moss is another thing you can add to the soil. Again, that comes out of bogs in different areas of the North America or wherever you are in the world. There's probably peat moss somewhere and peat bogs nearby. And the big thing with that is it can be a little expensive. Usually it's compressed into a bale, so try to figure out how much you really need so you don't overdo it. But that really adds good to the tilt of the soil, breaks it up a little bit, adds water retention capabilities to the soil if you have a sandy soil. And that's good stuff, too, to add in there. Leaves, you can get those for free around your neighborhood. You shouldn't have to buy those. You can get those pretty much anywhere from municipal composting sites or your own composting sites or your neighbors when they clean up their leaves. Look for a variety of leaves, not just oak leaves. Add a variety in there. And make sure you shred them up.
That was one thing I was going to say. And the other thing that you spoke about on one of our composting shows is that if you're using the leaves on your property and you're an organic gardener, now you know what's going back into your garden. And if you're gathering your neighbor's leaves who aren't organic, or you go to a municipal lot where they might just have, and they're composting days and things, so you don't know what you're putting back into your organic soil. So it's like, if you know it's at home, you know, so to speak, keep it at home. So just a thought.
It is a thought too. And another, actually a good point about the municipal, and I'm not trying to diss the municipal composting operations, but when you go to pick up compost and all from these municipal sites, it's going to have glass in it because they just pick up stuff on the street, wherever it is, and bottles get ground up in there. So there is going to be pieces of glass in there. So you should be aware of that when you're gardening. Make sure you're wearing gloves. You know, keep your eye out for little shiny spots. Manures and hay are another thing we can add in there if you're lucky enough to be near a stable or near, I guess not so much the circuses anymore, but places where there's animals where they have bedding material, hay, and their manures, they can be worthwhile things to put in there. The biggest thing with that is a lot of times you'll get a lot of weed seeds mixed in with that, so you may have to be prepared for a little extra weeding operation there. And certainly the smell. If your neighbors are nearby, they may not be too happy if you bring home fresh manure to your garden and stuff. And that another thing when you're using manure is make sure you age it first. You know, it has to sit in a pile somewhere and break down a little bit because it's going to have a lot of acidity to it from the urine and all that. So you don't want to be putting that right on the soil immediately, especially if there's plants in there because it'll burn them.
Well, you know what? As you mentioned about the manure and hay, I'm thinking back to my earlier days, family farm. And we would actually have, as you mentioned it, we'd actually have the manure in piles, and we would take the oldest pile that might be 2 or 3 years old, and that's the one we'd be taking back to our gardens because it would break down. And then a few of my neighbors would want the fresh manure, so we would truck it on down, and our properties there smelled a little bit like, to me it's fine because it smelled like the farm, but to some others who weren't farming people, it didn't smell so good there. So are there any other products that you use to amend soil or could use to amend soil?
Oh, there's so many different things you can use. Certainly your compost pile is part of your soil amendment program, so you should have your compost pile, and we talked about how to do that. Cover crops is another way. Now, cover crops are seed that you put into the soil after you're done with your gardening section. So it would be like in the fall or, you know, the winter time. And there's different things you can use, winter rye, hairy vetch, clovers, buckwheat. And these are things that you grow, and it covers the soil for the winter, helps prevent erosion, especially if you have a rainy area or a windy area, it'll prevent soil erosion. They'll grow during the winter, and in the springtime, they'll either die down or you go whack them down with the weed whacker or scyther, whatever you have, and then you rototill them in. And this is just called green manure. That's what they call it, because that's basically what manure is. It's the grass and the weeds that the animals ate up and put through the digestive system. So this, you're bypassing the animal. You're doing your own green manure, you know, in there.
Does that add a lot of nitrogen then back to the soil?
That's a big nitrogen adder. The important thing with cover crops, do not let them go to seed. Make sure, because then you're going to have more cover crops than you're going to have regular crops. So you got to make sure you get out there early enough to do it. And again, that's fairly labor intensive too, because it's a two-step process to knock them down, grind them up a little bit, and then rototill them. And you'd have to rototill. Commercially available products, there's bags that you can get. Bumper Crop is one particular name. And a lot of these have all different things added in there. So it's a ready-to-go amendment that comes by the bag. And it's got peat moss in it and seashells and kelp and fish emulsion and everything else all blended together. And it's brought up into a naturally spot for pHY, so it blends in well. Kelp is another thing that's from the ocean, and that comes in either liquid or granular form. You can add kelp in there. Fish emulsion comes using a liquid form. You can add that spraying onto the top of the lawn or onto the garden itself or even onto the plants. That's another way to feed. Hair, you know, hair from your drain at home and stuff, and even hair, I guess, from the beauty shop. That's all good stuff to add in there. Grass clippings, you have to be careful. Make sure that your grass is organic grass. You're not using chemically treated grass, and there's no weed seeds or not too many weed seeds mixed in. Again, that should be aged before it's put in there to make sure that it's breaking down the seeds, hopefully, for the weeds are rendered inert if you kept it hot enough. And seaweed, another thing. Don't just go down to the ocean and collect seaweed. It's going to be full of salt. But seaweed can be available commercially by the bag, and that can be added in there. Bone meal, another great thing in there. It's made from ground-up bones, adds a lot of minerals. And even your sand, you can get just, if you got real tight soil and need to break it up a little bit, adding a little play sand into there is a good idea. And even your vacuum bag contents from the houses, you can rototill them in or put them through the compost pile. As long as there's no chemicals in there or sawdust from the shop that has chemicals in it or any glass or anything like that.
So you mentioned so many of these different products. Do you use most, or do you, I'll use the right word, do you amend with most of these products yourself?
Yes, pretty much everything. I'm not doing cover crops right now. I did that for a number of years, and it's just as you get older, the labor is a little bit too much for me. But everything else that I listed there, I do. I don't do manures either. I don't have any local manures. What I'll do instead is I'll have some organic fertilizers that are made from natural processes. So I may do some spot fertilization in the soil to help amend it right in the hole around the plant.
Now, you mentioned all these things to put in your soil. Is there anything I should not put into my soil?
Pet wastes are very bad to do. The reason we talk about that is they can have pathogens in there that can be passed through the plant and onto humans, so that would contaminate your soil. So no pet waste. Try to keep the cats away if you can. You know, sprinkle some smelly stuff out there. Citrus and oil usually repels the cats. Painted or treated wood is very bad. Chemicals in treated wood, that's pressure-treated wood that's treated to not decay, that can have arsenic in it and other really bad stuff. So you don't want to introduce that into your soil, obviously.
And you know, as you mentioned that, there are a lot of people that will build wooden frames, and they might be building the wooden frames, and they need to make sure that they're, again, will the wood they're going to use break down over time? The answer is yes. But if you're using that treated wood, as you just mentioned, some of those chemicals then are leaching into your soil. So you need to be real careful about, especially if you're sort of enclosing beds or building raised beds, that you're using just like a kiln-dried, you know, pine or whatever it is, something like that.
Right. There's some good woods out there that have a natural decay resistance to them that will lengthen the life of your raised bed if that's what you're doing. You know, all kinds of chemicals. You know, it goes without saying, you know, try to keep the chemicals, especially out of your vegetable garden, so that they're not contaminating your soil. You're working this hard, keep it natural. And certainly sewage, you know, that's a bad thing to put out there. You know, people are like, well, what's wrong with that? There's a lot of problems with that. Again, pathogens and smell and just contamination. Even gray water. A lot of people have gray water systems, and the gray water is where you take your non-sewage water, it's just like from the washing machine or maybe from your sink, and they route it through special piping in the house. They have two drain systems, and they collect it and they put it out onto the into the yard. But don't use that on your vegetable gardens. I would just use that for irrigation. Maybe on the lawn would be the best place for that.
All right, now that you described all that, my question is, there are these letters. What does OMRI mean?
That stands for the Organic Materials Research Institute. And this is a group of people that get together and they review all the different organic materials and they give their seal of approval for that. So you want to look for that OMRI approval seal on the products you're buying, because that means at least it's meeting the requirements that they have for natural organic products.
Now, here is probably, we may be able to do a show on my next question, because I see many people just, they say, I do this because I do it every year. And they say, I'm liming my soil. So tell me, we talked about worm castings as poop. So tell me the poop or the dirt on lime.
Well, again, lime is, it's relatively inexpensive. So that's why a lot of people probably just do it all the time. So, well, it doesn't cost much and I'm going to do it. And they're probably getting away with it. But technically, you should never use lime until you've done a pH test, because you need to find out what the pH of your soil is so that you bring it into a range. Now, if you're doing vegetable gardening, 6.2 to 6.8 is the level you want to be at. You can do that either with a little meter that you can stick in the ground, that soil testing group that we talked about if you send it out, or they have little laboratory kits you can do it yourself in little test tubes and all that. So that's the best way to find out. 7 is really where the neutral side is. In a lawn, you want to be below 7. If you get anything above 7 or below 6, you're going to have some performance issues with your lawn and certainly in your garden. And I never used to pay a lot of attention to pH, believe it or not, because I use so much composting and everything else. The soil kind of found its natural level. But now I have a meter and I do test much more regularly for my pH, and I just adjust a little bit as I need to. And then I test my neighbor's lawns for them and prove how what they're doing on their lawn is not working properly and how they've screwed up the pH on their lawn big time. And maybe that's why their lawn kind of fizzles out in the summertime.
Well, I've got a fun question for you, because you keep talking about dirt and mud and soil. When you were young, did you make mud pies growing up?
Well, sure. I think every red-blooded American person like probably played in the yard. And if there were girls in the neighborhood, you certainly made mud pies with them. I don't recall ever eating them or tasting them, but you know, having that little bakery shop or whatever you wanted to call it was certainly fun to do.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm thinking about this. You're answering it. And the last time I took my niece Gabby fishing, really, the fishing is not about me. It's to pass it on to her. So she and I are fishing. And after probably her 15th bluegill, she just got tired of fishing. So she began to make mud pies on the shoreline and was serving them up to me, because I decided this, I could actually get some casting in for a few minutes. So I didn't eat any of the mud pies she made. But yeah, I guess, hey, I made a few mud pies myself. But going back to the real deal stuff, is there a time to wait after amending your soil?
I try to plan on 30 days or so, to depending how much amending you're doing and you're given times for things to balance out. But I try to get, before my planting date, I try to count backwards whatever my frost-free date is and I'm going to start planting, to try and amend 30 days previous to that, just to give time for everything to settle in and for the worms to kind of find themselves again and get put back together. And everything will just, the pH will come. Take time for the pH to do its thing. And if you're doing lime, if you're doing a vegetable garden, be sure you use powdered lime. It's much more better than a granular lime. A granular lime will not balance out the soil quickly because it's in nuggets. So you need to have the powdered lime if you're doing a vegetable garden. Granular is okay on the lawn because it's easier and quicker to and cleaner to put around. Doesn't blow all over the place on a windy day. So it's give the time. You don't need to rush it. The more time you give it to balance itself out, the better it is.
Now, you have any parting words on soil?
Yes, enjoy. Again, when you're out gardening, yes, it's work, but you take time to enjoy what's out there. Enjoy that earthy smell of the dirt. You know, pick up a handful and smell it. It should smell good, like the forest. If it doesn't smell that way, then you're not amending properly. But it's just a good earthy smell. It's healthy for that. And another thing we didn't discuss is walking on your beds. Now, you just rototilled all this, stirred it all up, broke it up, got air in there, and really loosened it up. do not walk on your soil beds. You should have paths up the middle, step over the beds, because what you're going to do is you're just going to pack it right down again and destroy the tilt that you worked so hard to create. So keep your big feet off the vegetable bed.
There you go. So today we got the dirt on soil from our expert, organic gardener, Inspector Dave. And Inspector Dave, as usual, I'm going to tell you right now that I want to thank you, but I think you're just sort of nudging me saying, I got one more little thing, so go.
Again, that enjoyment factor we talked about of enjoying your soil. Enjoy the bird show. After you rototill or after you amend your soil and the ground's sitting there, it's going to be a lot of little bugs and all that are going to hatch. And the birds are going to be come flying in there, and they're going to be loving all these little insects. And if it stays dry, you'll see them taking little dust baths in there too, where they're preening and doing their feathers and getting them ready there. So enjoy the bird show too that you're going to have on your organic gardening beds.
Well, now I think I can say that this is the dirt on soil from Inspector Dave. So, hey, thanks for coming into the studio.
Okay, thanks for having me. Always fun to be here.
Until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.